Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Okay, Carrie, would you come up here and read the steps for us, please?
Hi, I'm Carrie.
Hi.
1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admit it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying not only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and practice these principles in all our affairs. Okay. And the 12 traditions. Hi, I'm Alexis from Clarksburg.
Hi, Alexis.
1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3. The only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or friend. The teenage relatives of alcoholics, when gathered together for mutual aid, may call themselves an Alateen group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other Alateen and other non-family groups, or AA as a whole. 5. Each Alateen group has but one purpose, to help other teenagers of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, and by encouraging and understanding the members of our immediate families. 6. Alateen, being part of Al-Anon family groups, ought never to endorse, finance, or lend our name to any outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Although a separate entity, we should always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. 7. Every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alateen 12-step work should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. Our groups, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. The Al-Anon groups have no opinion on outside issues, hence our name ought never to be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. We need guard with special care the anonymity of all AA members. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personalities. And with the page for today.
Hi, I'm Candy from Morgantown, West Virginia.
Hi, Candy.
This is July 28th, 1990. When I was worked up about my problems at home, anything would set me off. If someone looked at me the wrong way or said something I didn't want to hear, I'd blow up by beating them up. Things are starting to change now that I'm in Alateen. I'm learning to cope with the people at school. I realize now that my frustrations are inside of me and have nothing to do with anyone else. I'm starting to work out those feelings by talking to my friends and using slogans like "Easy Does It." I have better control of my temper now. In fact, I haven't hit anyone in quite a while. Even my schoolwork is improving. I'm making good progress, and it's all because of the program. Things to think about. When I lose my temper, I'm out of control, and innocent people end up getting hurt. The program helps me find control again. When I start to understand my problems better, I can learn how to let go of a lot of my frustration. Today, when I feel things starting to boil over inside of me, I'll remember, easy does it, and practice a bit of self-control.
Thanks, guys. Our next speaker is a girl whom I just met this weekend. She's a terrific girl, and I love her a lot. She's a little nervous, so if you all would give her a big round of applause down here and help her feel at home some. So, Charity C., Chesapeake, Ohio.
Hi, I'm Charity.
Hi, Charity.
And I'm really glad I'm a member of Alateen today, because I don't think I could just do anything like this without Alateen. First, I want to say that I'm really glad that those of you came back to listen to me, because I know a lot of people left. But at least those of you were good enough to come and listen to me today, just like I was good enough to listen to the other speakers. And I also want to say I'm thankful for all the Alateens that came to listen to me today, because for the past year and a half that I've been in the program, you all have been there for me every step of the way, and I would never been able to do it without you guys. And I also want to thank my sponsor, Peggy, for giving me this rock, because it's really special to her, and now it's really special to me while I keep it while I'm up here. Because I'm going to be just holding it and squeezing it to keep me, you know, not messed up. Okay. I'm going to start way back as far as I can remember. Well, first of all, they gave me an hour to talk up here, and I'm only 15 years old, so... So mine might not last as long as all the, the other speakers. I'm gonna start when I was about, I don't know. My parents, my real mom and dad got divorced when I was about two, and from what everybody's told me, my real dad was really abusive, but I don't remember anything before I was 7 years old, because I blocked everything out because it was so bad, you know, and I can only remember the good things, like having people spoil me and things, you know, to make up for the bad things. But in the last couple of months, I've started to... have flashbacks about what happened. I guess my higher power thinks that now I can handle it. So now it's time for me to remember. And I thought I'd go ahead and tell you about one of the flashbacks that I've had a few times, so you'll understand what it was like a little bit. I remember going to the beach with my real dad and his girlfriend and my brother. And I didn't want to go into the ocean because I didn't know how to swim and I was afraid of the water. And my dad's girlfriend wanted me to go into the water with her, and I said I didn't want to go, I was too scared. And my dad just flew into this rage and started hitting me and things, and yelling and screaming. And he told me that if I didn't go into the water, that he was going to keep hitting me. And I was so stubborn and hot-tempered, and I was so angry with him, I just let him do it, you know? And finally, I got over the stubbornness and went into the water with her, and I'll never forget, you know? And she knew what was happening, and she didn't, you know, she couldn't stop him either. So that's just how now I know what my dad was like. You probably think that my real dad's alcoholic in my family because he acted so crazy, but he wasn't. My mom got remarried not even a year after she divorced my real dad to my stepdad, and he's the alcoholic in my family. You'll probably get confused because every once in a while I'll call my stepdad my real dad because he's been a dad to me since I was two. And I haven't seen my real dad since I was in the fourth grade, so I always have called my stepdad dad. And he is my dad as far as I'm concerned because I love him more than I could love anybody else as a dad, no matter if he drinks or not. When I was about 7 or 8, my family moved. It's about a 4-hour drive away from the rest of my family, my relatives, because my stepdad got a new job. And I had to start a new school. And for the first week of school, I cried myself sick to go home because I was afraid that I'd miss the school bus and never get to see my real mom again, just like I never got to see my dad. And all during the third grade, I would cry and run to the nurse and tell her I was sick. I wasn't sick. I just said I was sick because I was afraid my mom would leave me and I'd never see her. I was afraid of being all alone in this big, big world. And that really couldn't happen to me because I have an older half-sister and a younger half-sister and a brother and my dad, and I have a lot of people who care about me. But when I was in the third grade, I was fat. I mean, I was huge. I was as round as I was tall. And as you can see, I'm not very tall, so... My brother and my sisters would make fun of me for being fat. And I would run to my room and I would cry. And no one would ever come and help me because my mom was upset about my dad drinking and my dad was always passed out somewhere. And no one would, you know, it was like no big deal that Charity's crying again. And I felt like I was nothing special because my older sister was special because she was the oldest. And my little sister was special because she was the youngest. And she was also my stepdad's little baby girl. And my brother was special because he was the only boy. And I was nothing. And I didn't have anything of my own because I had to share a room with my brother, with my sisters. They would, you know, when they would tease me and things, I felt so unloved and like I wasn't even accepted in my own family. And I remember when my dad would get drunk too, he would come in and he'd call me fat and ugly, tell me how ugly he always said I was ugly. And he would never do it when anybody was around. You know, he always put me down when nobody was around. I think that's a lot for an 8-year-old to take. So what I would do everything to make my mom and dad happy. I would fix my dad his supper when he would come in late. And so he wouldn't. I remember one time he dropped a pan on the floor and burned a hole in the linoleum. And I was afraid he was going to burn the house down. So from then on, I was the one who would cook his meals because, you know, I don't know, I just felt sorry for him. And when mom would be screaming and crying that she was going to leave dad because he was always drinking, I would tell her everything's going to be okay. It can't get any worse. But with my brother and my sisters, it was different. When I would get mad at mom or dad, I would take it out on my little sister because she was always there and she was littler than me. So I thought it was okay. And I also would get so angry because my stepdad loved her and I didn't have a dad. And I hated her for it. My brother used to pick on me too. And he would do things just because I would react. And he would do things like stick his feet in my face or something, you know? And I'd usually end up punching him and giving him a bloody nose because I was really good at that. And I seemed to always be ready to explode, like I was a time bomb or something, just ready to go off at any minute. But I always held it in me because I didn't want anybody to get hurt. And the only one getting hurt was me, or when I would beat up on my sister, or when I'd give my brother a bloody nose, then they'd get hurt too. And you probably think that I hated my brother, but I didn't. I loved him more than I loved anybody in the world because I didn't have any real brothers or sisters. And I thought that my mom loved my dad more than she loved my brother and me. So my brother and I became very close, and we told each other everything. He felt like, well, see, he looks identical to my dad, my real dad. And so my stepdad didn't like him, and they didn't get along, and they'd fight constantly. So my brother and I would talk about things and work things out together. My brother has been like a father to me at some times when my dad would drink. Now he buys me clothes. He takes me places. He does things with me like a dad would. He's only 19 years old. I have my brother on a very high pedestal because he's always been there for me. Well, I used to have him on a high pedestal, but then I learned in the program that you shouldn't have anybody on a high pedestal, so I just gave him a little one now. I remember going into the fourth grade, and my brother and me had to go to court with my mom because my real dad wanted to see us, and I thought that was pretty strange for someone to want to see his kids when he hadn't seen them in years. And so we went to court, and I remember the judge saying that he wanted to see me and Alan in his chambers. That's my brother's name, Alan. And so my brother walked down the hall with me, holding my hand. And we went in there, and the judge was on the phone. And I was crying because I was scared. I didn't know what to expect going in there. And Alan was too tough to cry. That's what I always thought. My brother doesn't cry. And he always had that image, you know, don't let Charity see you cry. Then the judge slammed down the phone and jumped up and screamed in my face to stop crying, because that's just a woman's way of getting what she wanted. For years after that, until I came into Alateen, the only people I let see me cry were my brother and my mom and my stepdad and my sisters, because I didn't want anybody to think that I was just crying to get my way. And I started to build up my walls higher and higher then. The judge's decision was for my brother and me to spend Christmas and other holidays with my dad. And that afternoon after the court session, we had to go with my dad for 4 weeks. And we were out of town. We didn't have enough clothes or anything, but we had to leave that day. We couldn't even go home. I guess I had fun on the trip because my dad was a Boy Scout leader. Don't ask me why. He wasn't even good at it. He was cruel to the kids in the troop. So I became friends with the kids who were in the troop. But I couldn't wait to get home to see my mom because I was praying that my dad would stop drinking while I was gone, because I always felt like it was my fault that he drank, because I was an extra responsibility for him to take. He didn't have to have me there. but he did it because he loved me. And I didn't think anybody loved me. And he was always there. Well, and I was also, my mom would call and she would say, your stepdad wants to adopt you. And my brother said things like, I'm not going to let him adopt me. He's too mean to me. So, of course, I went along with what my brother said. But I didn't tell my mom. Now, every time I think about that, I think about how stupid I was. Because when I went home, I should have known that when my dad, my real dad, and his daughter were sleeping together, it was wrong. And I should have known that my stepdad wouldn't stop drinking and that he wasn't going to adopt me. And most of all, I should have known that when my cousin who was staying with my dad, who drank, and who was there because he got a girl pregnant, and didn't want to take the responsibility for it. I should have known that when he tried to touch me in certain places, I thought it was okay. After I went home, I didn't tell anybody. Because my cousin told me that nobody would have to know. And when I went home, I felt dirty, so I didn't tell anybody. When I finally understood what my dad and his daughter were doing and what my cousin had been doing to me, I was ashamed that I even knew him, and I was ashamed of myself. When I finally got over that, I had such a high wall built up so that nobody could hurt me ever again. And it was hard for me the next few years. I was in the fourth grade when all that happened. That's my best friend, and when she cries, I cry. The next few years of my life were pretty much routine. My dad would come home drunk 3 or 4 nights a week, and he'd get in fights with my mom and call me names. Come in my room afterwards and tell me how much he loved me, but how much he was telling me the truth about how fat I was and how ugly I was. And so, then after all that, he'd pass out. And I thought it was my job to be perfect, so I started getting the best grades in school that I could, and I competed with everybody who tried to be better than me, because if anybody was better than me, that was just another reason for my dad to drink. Then something strange happened. My mom found Al-Anon. I was in the eighth grade when my mom sat me down to have a talk with me and my little sister, because at the time my older sister had moved out because she couldn't stand living at home anymore. So she just married to get, you know, I think she married to get away, and she has had a little girl. And my brother moved out because he was tired of fighting with everybody. So it was just my mom, my dad, and my sister and me. Mom said that Dad had a drinking problem. And I thought she was crazy, and I hated her for saying that about the one man who tried to raise me right. And I thought that she was insane because she would go around screaming and hollering and getting us up and taking us, all saying she's going to leave Dad and have us pack our clothes. And then we'd get down to the end of our road, which isn't even a block, and we'd turn around and come back because it was good for us. And my dad was predictable, and I always knew what he was going to do. And my friends thought he was cool, and they all wanted him to be their dad. So it was natural to think my mom was the one who was wrong. So when one night we all got into the car, my mom, my sister, and me, and we went to an Al-Anon meeting, and there were only three people there. And they just kept saying that my dad was sick, and we were there to change ourselves, not him. And I thought, well, my mom belongs here because they're as crazy as she is. But I don't belong here because I'm already perfect, or at least I'm trying to get that way. During my eighth grade year, I was at the top of my class, and that was something that I had worked 4 years to get, and I didn't even want it. I just wanted it for my dad. All these years I had resentments toward my mom, because I thought she was the reason that my parents got divorced. She was the reason Dad drank. She was the reason why my brother left me. And I was always fighting with her and no one else. And I'm sorry. Well, Mom kept going to those meetings, and I got on Dad's side. I thought she was crazy. He thought she was crazy, so Dad and me sort of went against Mom, and my little sister was going to the meetings with my mom. Then she came home with another idea. There was a group for my sister and me called Alateen. And that mom said that we had to go to 6 meetings, and if we still didn't like it, we didn't have to go back. When I walked in the doors, I had made up my mind that I was staying in that Al-Anon room with my mom, and she wasn't going to get rid of me that easily. And then this really pretty girl came up to me, and she had this big smile on her face and asked me to go back to the Alateen room with her. And I went because she scared me to death. And at the same time, I was so jealous of her because she was pretty and she had something to smile about. And I hadn't smiled for years. It was always fake smiles that I smiled. I was always trying to please somebody. I had about 4 different personalities. One at school that my teacher liked, and she would always praise me for being such a good kid. One that my dad liked, my dad and my mom liked, because I was always doing things that they wanted. And I would always go to my room and stay in there all night long, never come out. One that my friends liked, that was always cheerful and happy and always doing things to cheer other people up. Because I didn't have problems, and that's how my friends knew me, Charity, the one who always smiled, the one that didn't have any problems, that came from an ordinary family. They didn't know a whole lot about me. Then there was another personality, the real me, the me that I shut up inside me, that never came out, that was always crying for help, and nobody ever heard because I never let them. When I got in that meeting, they kept telling me that it wasn't my fault that my stepdad drank. In that whole meeting, usually people, the first time at Alateen, are really quiet. They don't say very much. I sat there the whole time and denied every word that they said. I said that my dad was perfect. There isn't anything wrong with him. And I was so angry. And there were big guys in there, big ones. That if they would have kept telling me that, I'm pretty sure I could have fought them just like I did my brother. Well, I kept coming back. And the next week, the sponsor asked me to go to an Alateen get-together. It was like a dance. And I was so hateful toward her. I was so stuck up that when I finally got enough of the program, I made amends because I was rude and cruel for no reason. It took me a long time to get the program into my head and into my heart, because it doesn't do you any good to have it in your head if you're not going to put it in your heart. And I thought I had it both places. But I didn't. I kept coming back because there were cute guys there. And I didn't care what they talked about as long as those cute guys were there. And eventually, the girl who came up to me and asked me to come into this and asked me to come to the Alateen room with her. She's my best friend. And now I try to do the same thing for the other Alateens when they come in and they're new. I go and I talk to them, because I know how it feels to be so scared and so angry that you don't even want to be there. And I didn't even know that I had any of the program until about 2 months later. And I went to Ashland, Kentucky, because they wanted to start a new meeting. And everybody was really quiet, so I just started saying things that I had heard in the meeting, and I had learned more than what I thought I had. I talked about everything from sponsorship to the 12 steps. Well, it's a good thing I started to get that program, because I started going in February of 1989. And there's a thing at my school called the academic reception for people who are smart and who are overachievers. Well, I was supposed to get this really big award, and I knew it. I knew it was going to me. And my dad and my mom were sitting front row, just proud. And I was so full of myself that my higher power must have really thought, you know, it's time to knock her down. Because when I started, they called my name to come and get that award. The heels that I had begged my mom to get me got caught on the hem of my skirt and pulled my skirt down. And if I wouldn't have had the program, I would have stood there and cried. But all I did was pulled up my skirt, walked up on the stage, got my award, and laughed the whole way back to sit with the rest of the kids. I came to Jackson's Mill last year, and I met a lot of the kids last year. And I'm so glad that I came, and I'm grateful to the person who provided the money for me to go, because I didn't have the money. And I found out a week before I was going to go that I was going to get to go. And that weekend was the weekend I needed to get away, because my sister was staying with some relatives. And some things had happened that scared me really bad, and I needed to get away. And if it wasn't for the Alateens who were here last year, I don't know where I would be, because I was really scared. Last fall, everybody started to get really close. We had about 22 members in one meeting, and we started to form other meetings. And now we have 3 Alateen meetings a week. And we all started to get really close, just like a family. They felt like my brothers and my sisters. And we would do things together on weekends. And I could just look at those people and see how much they grew. And they could see how much I was growing. And each time I would see someone else grow, I would grow even a little bit more. And then my brother came home around Christmas time. And he was drinking with his friends, and it scared me. I was begging God not to let him turn out like my dad, because he drank with my dad sometimes too. And I was begging him not to let that happen. Because if I would have lost Alan, I wouldn't have had anything left. Well, my brother came in, and he gave everybody their Christmas gifts. And then he pulled me off to the side and handed me mine. And he said, "Charity, in this box, it shows you how much I love you. It cost me 3 times as much as what it cost for everybody else's presents." And I pulled out a gold chain that now I wear next to my heart, because that's where my brother is, in my heart. He lives with my aunt and uncle, which is a long way away from here. And I don't get to see him very much. So the only place I can keep him is in my heart. When my sister got married, she married a really nice man. He's really nice. He's a lot older than her, but he's really nice. Well, he would always stick up for me. And he had a lot of friends who liked me. And then after Christmas, he started saying, "Charity, you finally developed a sense of reality." And it made me think that all that time, I'd had no sense of reality. I was raised in a fantasy world where everything was good, there's nothing bad. And only alcoholics were in New York and California and places. And when I finally faced reality, real reality, is that alcoholics are everywhere, and I can't run from them. And people who drink, I can't run from. And if my friends drink, I can't run from them, but I don't have to do it. At school, a lot of my friends changed. They weren't the same people. I mean, literally, they weren't the same people. They didn't change because of me. They were just not the same people anymore. I didn't get along with those people. So there was a guy who started coming to Alateen who goes to my school, and we started to hang around together at school. And he's a very nice person. But my friends, I was in the crowd where everybody tried to knock each other down just to be more popular. My friends didn't approve of that, of me hanging around with him. So they left me, you know, just hanging there. But I wasn't going to stop being his friend, because he's one of the best friends I have. Everybody in Alateen has been nice to me, and I wouldn't desert them. Stop it. I started around the beginning of summer, I started to slip. Well, no, it was about around February I really started to slip. I had made a really big mistake in the program, and my mom didn't approve of it. Nobody really approved of it. And I was thinking about committing suicide. And I had the pills and everything. You see, I can't shoot myself. I'm afraid of guns, and I can't stab myself. I can't stand the sight of blood. So the only thing I could do was take pills, and I'm not even very good at swallowing those. So there were these pills in our cabinet that I was allergic to because my doctor gave them to me. They were muscle relaxers, and they made me hyper and made my heart beat really fast. And if just one could do that, if I took 4 or 5, I wouldn't have any problem. But every time I tried to take those drugs, one of my Alateen friends would be on the phone. They'd call me just before I did it. And I know my mom gets mad at me sometimes for being on the phone so much, but if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here. If you don't quit it. It wasn't always the same person who called. It was different people. But those people loved me. And I don't have a hard time at all telling them that I love them. And I've only known these people a couple days, and I love them. And I don't even know half of you, and I love you. When I started to slip really bad, my mom and me started fighting more and more. I never agreed with her. I didn't have very many friends at all. And then my mom, we finally got in a really big fight in the beginning of June. She said she couldn't handle me anymore. And all the time before this, I was planning on going to an adolescence unit to get away because I thought I had really bad depression. And then I was thinking of going to a place called Time Out for runaways. But then my mom said, I can't handle this anymore. And I'm sending you to stay with your brother. I hated her for doing that to me too. But when I got there, I was staying with my grandparents at the time. But my mom thought my brother was the one who was going to be good for me. When I got there, the first night I was there, my brother came to get me. And he took me to his house. And he just told me, I think it's about time you started listening to Mom. You're starting to act like me. And I guess he didn't think that was a very good thing to do. But all I wanted was to be like him. And before that, all I wanted to be like was my dad. But I wanted to have a job just like my dad. I wanted to take in kids whose dad left them, just like he did for me. But I wasn't about to get married. And I wasn't going to get married because I don't believe in love. I believe in love between a mom and her daughter or her son or a dad or brothers and sisters or other relatives. But I don't believe that a man and a woman can fall in love. See, everything in my life has been get married, get divorced. Everyone does it. My uncles, my aunts. My dad has had about 10 wives. So that's what I thought it was like. I didn't think people loved each other. I thought they got used to each other. And then they got tired of each other and got divorced. And that they only wanted to make the kids pay for what they were doing. But I didn't see how I was going to do very good doing that, because I could just see a female construction worker out there trying to raise a whole herd of kids without a husband. Because my dad's a construction worker. That's what I wanted to do, say. So when I was staying with my brother, I just wanted to be like him, and he didn't want me to be like him. And I was hurt. You see, my brother was supposed to get married, and I thought I lost him for good. And then he said he wasn't going to get married, and then I had him back all of a sudden. And then I met the girl he was supposed to marry, and I wish he would have. But a lot of it, I think, is my fault that he didn't marry her. You see, I listen to everything my brother tells me to do. I'm supposed to be in on by 9:30. I'm supposed to stay away from boys. I'm supposed to go to a Christian college. I'm supposed to come and live with him when I graduate. Everything's just supposed to be perfect so I won't get hurt. And I wanted the same thing for my brother, so I told him I didn't approve of the girl he was going to marry. I didn't like her, is what I said. And then when I was staying with him, I found out that she was a beautiful person on the inside and on the outside. And that she's one of my best friends now, even though she's almost 21 years old. My brother and I were talking. We went to see my aunt, and on the way home, his ex-fiance was there. And on the way home, he told me, "Cherry, don't ever be like me." And he said, "If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. I'd just run my truck off of a bridge or something. But I wouldn't leave you alone." And I wouldn't leave him alone either. When I came back, when I was up staying with him, I stayed with him for 2 weeks. Everybody told me how pretty I was, how nice I was, how sweet I was. So I finally started to build up a self-esteem. And then I came back, and my best friend had a new boyfriend. See, before, whenever I'd date somebody, she'd be dating somebody, and when I'd break up, she'd break up. And now she had somebody, and I didn't. And I felt alone. And I felt ashamed because I felt that way. So I was really cruel to her for no reason, just because I was jealous. No, I wasn't really jealous. I didn't want her to have anybody because right now I didn't want anybody and I didn't want her to want anybody. But what I had to learn was that we're two separate people. And even though we are best friends, we have to make our own decisions. Even though a lot of the time they're the same problem, we still need to make the same decisions. When I came back, I thought that the Alateen was going to fall apart while I was gone. Because I thought I was holding it together. Well, when I came back, everybody was on vacation and everything, and it wasn't very good. Nobody had done anything with anybody for a while, so I thought they had fallen apart without me. And then I felt guilty for that, too. So what do? I volunteer our house to have a picnic. And guess who had to do all the work? It might have been a fun picnic, but the week before that, I was so tired I didn't even know what I was doing. And we finally all got close again. And even though it's summer and we're all going our separate ways, when we come back, we're still friends. And we still call each other. Probably we call each other more now than we ever did. And we had a lot of cliques in our program before, you know, special groups. And if somebody who didn't have as much money as another person came, we just excluded them. We don't do that anymore. I know I haven't talked a full hour, but I almost did, so that's all I have to say, almost. I remember my sponsor telling me last year that someone came up to her and told her that the saddest part about the Alateen speaker was that he didn't have an ending to his story. I'm only 15 years old. I hope to live about another 50 years. I'm not going to die tomorrow. It's not the end yet. Lots of things will happen before my life is over. Because I'm not going to think of things like suicide anymore. Because they're not going to get me anywhere. And I know that I have a higher power that will help me through the problems that I'm going to have over the years. And I've gone to church ever since we moved. But ever since I've been in Alateen, I've had a stronger relationship with my higher power than I ever have. I have a very good friend in Alateen. She wanted to help me, so I told her. She says something all the time that always makes me feel really good. She says, let me find it, that nothing on God's earth happens by mistake. And I believe that. Because if it was happened by mistake that I found you all, then something's wrong. I think God had it planned for me to meet you all. I think he had it planned for me to be able to stand up here today and talk to you all and tell you what has happened in my life. And I needed my Alateen friends and my Al-Anon friends and my Al-Anon sponsors and my AA friends to grow and change into a better person. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I have all of you in my life. Thank you.